Blog Talk Radio.
Today. Thank you for tuning in to Locker Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I am your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you guys can always reach out to me on any one of my social handles on Twitter at Locker_Report, on Facebook, LockerReport.com, and on Locker Talk Podcast, on Instagram, LockerReport 100 all small caps, or you guys can simply shoot me an email there at barrybarnes@locker-report.com. Well, I hope everyone is safe where they are, whether they're at home or if you're essential workers, that you're out, that you're safe, and that you're guarding yourselves appropriately while we're still going through this national crisis with the pandemic. And I just hope that everyone understands my voice is okay, and that their families are okay. And again, you know, to anyone who may have lost a close relative or friend due to the COVID-19. You know, definitely our prayers go out to you and your families and hope that everyone are able to sustain through this trying time. With that being said, we know that everything is in God's hands, and so we're just going to continue to move forward and hope that the appropriate people that's in charge can continue to try to help get the country back on track. But we know that safety is first, so definitely 100% supporter of that. Now, in terms of sports, on a little lighter side, I know that sports is not being played, but that's starting to rev up a little bit now, you know, so that's pretty good. You know, everything falls on par with the NFL, with their draft going virtual, something that they normally do anyway, pretty much conduct, you know, their draft by phone and everything. The only thing is, it was just great to see. You know, the only thing that we miss is just seeing that emotion with the kids walking across the stage, being able to shake Commissioner Roger Goodell's hand, which is always a good treat to see. But you still was able to see the family side, the emotional side, while they was at home or wherever they were at. They had more family members and friends that was able to attend, more so than if they would have been in Las Vegas. So we still saw that. But as we know, that the NFL draft still went on. It was a very successful draft in terms of the platform that I cover. In regards to the NFL Regional Combine, you know, that was a success as well. Now, although the workouts were canceled this year, it still was a good portion of the players that were coming, that were invited to the regional, still was able to get an opportunity to get drafted or receive that phone call after the draft. We had 9 players from the platform that were drafted, and we had 36 players that signed as undrafted free agents, which was great to be able to see those guys that were pretty much unknown gems have an opportunity, you know, to be able to play in the NFL, because that's what it's all about. Working hand-in-hand with NFL football operations is definitely a privilege on my part. And then to be a part of that, to be able to report and evaluate these players to the best of my ability, and then to see how these guys are able to still get into the league is a great and fantastic thing. But last 2 weeks, we talked about that. But this week, we're going to move into a different portion, which was the HBCU Combine. This year was going to be the very first one that was going to be conducted. Hands on deck. Everyone was excited. I was definitely excited, you know, to see, you know, an opportunity for HBCU community to finally be represented and get their due. I know that this was something that was really, really on the heart of NFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Troy Vincent, you know, how he was pretty much the catalyst in putting this whole thing together, something that he'd been working on for the past, you know, couple of years. So this was not one of those things he just thought of in 1 year and boom, let's have a combine. No, there's a lot of work, a lot of effort to put into this and try to get, you know, all the parties necessary involved to want to be able to showcase this. But due to the pandemic, and rightfully so, we were able to had to cancel the workouts. Now, unlike the players that were coming to the NFL Regional Invitational, how a good portion of those guys were able to still have an opportunity to make an NFL roster. On the flip side, with the HBCU platform, it really did not scratch the surface for players from there getting the opportunity to be able to work out for a team. I mean, after all, for the most part, it's still a workout. There were only one player. There was only one player from the regional, from the HBCU combine platform that would have gone to the workout that actually got drafted, and that was Tennessee State's tackle, Latrevious Simmons. Now, Simmons, from my estimation, from my evaluation and breaking down, and if you guys follow locker-report.com and watch how, you know, I had evaluated these players, and I have an icon at the top that says HBCU ready. Everything predicated to the HBCU brand that's coming through locker-report.com, that's where you can go and see the content based off for the HBCU players only. And when I did my breakdown of where these defensive players will fit, not all of them were what you considered, what I considered draft worthy, and not all of them were considered team worthy. And that was the breakdown that I had. But out of all the players from the ACC, both defense and offense, Simmons was the one that I graded the highest out of all those players. I actually had him going as early as the fourth round because I really believe in his skill set. This young man is filthy. He's definitely an NFL player. You know, the Chicago Bears wound up drafting him in the seventh round. Then they got a steal in this young man, a 227 overall, where he is explosive off the ball, very athletic, fast, elite speed for the position, great lateral movement, powerful, great feet, versatile. And despite not playing the center position, he played on every position on the offensive line. Strong hands, and the part that stands out the most is that one-on-one, he's practically unbeatable. If he go one-on-one against, whether it's a good elite speed rusher or defensive tackle, nose tackle, if you go one-on-one with this young man, he is going to win. And that's one thing that I've never seen from watching his tapes, you know, reviewing him. When he lock in on you, you're not getting past him. And that was the reason why I had him, you know, at least going as high as the fourth round. But he was the only one that was drafted, so that was great. Alex Taylor from South Carolina State, the offensive lineman, you know, he was the only HBCU player that was invited to the National Scouting Combine. Now, he did not get drafted, but he did sign with the Cleveland Browns, so he still has earned a way into the NFL. And one of the biggest things that was on the hearts of those who run NFL football operation is that how the HBCU brand, how their portrayal, or I would say their representation in the NFL was piss poor, basically. When you look at, there's over 1,600 players total that's active in the NFL. Just the not even scratch the surface, I mean, not even a pinch of the players in the league from the HBCU combine, I mean, from the HBCU platform represented that number. It was very small. In fact, in 2017, and these are recent numbers, recent stats that, you know, in recent years leading up to 2020 up to the current. But just dating back to 2017, I'm quite sure if we go back even further, it probably will be a lot less. But sticking with 2017 and up, there were 31 players from the HBCU community that was in the NFL. In 2018, took a little dip. There were only 29 players from the HBCU platforms that were in the NFL. And last year, only up to 32 players from the HBCU platforms that were in the NFL. Now, with those facts in mind, out of the 32 players last year, there were 15 of them were offensive players, while the other 17 was on the defense side of the ball. Now, out of those 15 offensive players, 8 of those players were drafted. They included tackle Titus Howard from Alabama State, who actually went in the first round to the Houston Texans at the 23rd overall. Now, Howard was the first HBCU player drafted in the first round since Dominic Rose-Cromartie from Tennessee State, when he was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals in the first round, 16th overall, in the 2008 NFL draft. So that, you know, so that was a long time since we had an HBCU player that was drafted in the first round. Now, on the defense side of the ball, out of those 17, like I said, Dominic Rose-Cromartie was drafted in 2018. But the other highest player that got drafted was Indianapolis Colts linebacker Darius Leonard from South Carolina State, who was drafted in the second round, 36th overall, in the 2018 NFL draft. So we really, when you look at players that came through the NFL, I mean, that came through the HBCU platform, there's not too many that actually had the opportunity to really, be drafted higher. Now, in terms of the regional combine platform, Demetrius Rainey, Tennessee State, I'm going to write a piece on this school. I'm really intrigued how this school is starting to become an NFL factory. But Rainey was the first HBCU player who came through the NFL regional combine platform to be drafted. He was drafted in the seventh round, 250th overall, by the Los Angeles Rams in 2014. Now, dating back to the regional combine workouts in 2014, there were only 12 schools that were represented out of the from the platform leading up to last year, 2019. And 16 of those players that came from those 12 schools actually signed to an NFL squad at some capacity. Now, along with Rainey, wide receiver Joel Davis, Bethune Cookman, and running back William Stanback, Virginia Union, are the only HBCU, along with Rainey, were the only HBCU players that at least suited up during the preseason. So out of those 16 players, only 3 had an opportunity to play in the preseason, and currently from the NFL Regional Combine platform, in terms of HBCU players, Stanback is the only player currently in the NFL who is now currently with the Las Vegas Raiders. So you see how this basically from the past several years, that the number of players from the HBCU program has been very, very minute. And when we come into this season, last year, altogether out of those 32, there were 9 players that came through the process following the NFL draft in 2019. And when we look at those players, currently there are just 3 players from that mix that's still in the NFL. And those players are, like I talked about, Howard from Alabama State with the Houston Texans. He is one of them. Then we have, from the Baltimore Ravens, defensive back Terrell Barnes from Tennessee State, not surprised, who is currently with the Ravens. And the Cleveland Browns, punter Jamie Gillian from Arkansas Pine Bluff, who's with the Cleveland Browns. He's a punter, and yes, he is Caucasian. It's great just to let you know that, hey, you know, our white brothers and sisters still can go to HBCU programs and still be successful and still, you know, in the right situation, still getting into the NFL. And Jamie is one of those players. And he had a good rookie season with the Cleveland Browns. And I can see that he'll, you know, as far as the way how he is performing, being an extra component for the defense to help help opposing offenses go the distance. And when you have a punter that can have the ball hanging in the air for a very long time, that is a weapon for both. It's definitely a weapon for the defense. But the defense got there and do their job and get a 3-and-out and get a short field for the offense, then he become viable for the offense as well. Now, last year, 9 players, 1 player drafted, 2020. This year, same outcome. 9 players, 1 player drafted. We're going to take a quick pause. We're going to come back. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about the players from this year's camp, who they signed with, and how this COVID-19 situation, this pandemic, could be a blessing in disguise for some of the players that were not going, that did not get an opportunity to go to the NFL this year. We'll talk about that when we come back from a short pause.
Imagine a league built by the people, for the people. A league dedicated to the economic development of your city. So the question becomes, how good are the 32 teams that play in the Minor Football League? Well, there's only one way to find out. You have to experience the NFL.
Welcome back to the Locker Talk on the home of the Bachelor News Radio Network. NFL starts tomorrow today. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of LockerDashReport.com. And you guys can always reach out to me any one of my social handles on Twitter at Locker_Report, on Facebook, LockerReport.com, or Locker Talk Podcast, and on Instagram, LockerReport100, all small caps. Or you guys can reach me out directly via email at BarryBarnes@Locker-Report.com. And make sure you guys always stay tuned on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where we have every topic, anything you can think of in regarding the world's news, anything as far as politics, religion, law, social matters, anything you can think of, this network has it. Now, with the Bachelor News Radio Network show, with the boss, L.A. Bachelor, you know, as he goes on there on Mondays and Thursdays, make sure you check him out between 6 and 8 Eastern time. So make sure you go check that. I'll check his show out as he covers a variety of topics that's concerning locally and nationally. And then the Down Some Files with Coco Koshny, fantastic group right there. Love working with those guys. I was on that show a week ago. So make sure you guys check them out on Tuesday and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then our new show, You and the Law Show, with Chief Keith Humphreys and Chief Virgil Green, as these guys talk about and also being open and honest on conversation with America about law enforcement and their relationship with the black and brown community. And then the Dr. Larry Show that you can always catch with Dr. Larry on Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then, of course, yours truly on Fridays. And then the Pro Talk with Imani O that comes on right after me, Fridays at 9:30. So pretty much got everything covered when it comes down to news that reflects our community in this country. Now, right before we set this pause, we just talked about HBCU players and how they affect in the NFL, which has been very small. Over 1,600 players in the league, and you only average about 30 players from the HBCU platform that's been in the league since 2017. Now, last year there were 9 players from the HBCU process that somehow, some way made it to the NFL. And this year equaled the same. Out of 9 players, 1 player was drafted. And I talked about R.A. Simmons from Tennessee State, how he was able to be drafted by the Chicago Bears in the 7th round, where he went there as their 227th overall pick. I think they got a steal right there. Now, as far as the players that signed as undrafted free agents, you hear me talk about this young man several times. His name is Chris Rowland. He signed with the Atlanta Falcons, Tennessee State. This young man is shifty, breakaway speed, great vision, good feet, good hands and awareness, outstanding in traffic, balanced and control, dangerous out the backfield as a receiver, complete a slot and split out, and he's a solid return man as a return specialist. When we talk about with the Cleveland Browns, with the Alex Taylor, who was the only HBCU player that was invited to the scouting combine, he signed with the Cleveland Browns. When we go scroll down on the defense side of the ball, the Detroit Lions has signed Bobby Price for Norfolk State. I like this young man a lot. He's very intense, athletic, has good speed and hands, solid footwork. He's fearless, uses his size very well, decent cover skills, rarely surrenders the inside. You don't want to never give the inside to a speedy receiver, and that's something that he does a great job at, in not giving up the inside. He's patient yet aggressive, physical, and he does have a track and field background. Now, when we look at the Green Bay Packers, they signed the pair. Two guys actually went to the same school, so there's some familiarity there. But Jalen Morton from Prairie View A&M throws the deep ball well with accuracy, extends plays well from the pocket, has velocity on the ball, looks to pass first. He's only mobile when necessary, strong, commands the huddle, not the fastest, but he knows how to get to a spot, have decent touch, work the sideline very well, and he can be elusive. Now, with Morton, I basically talked about in my assessments of breaking him down that he needed to be on a squad where they had at least a veteran leadership, someone that he can learn from. Now, knowing Aaron Rodgers is probably not going to work too close with him, he really don't want to work with Jordan Hurts, who just got drafted in the first round. But we'll see how that play out. But I think Morton is in a good situation where he can learn, put some stuff on tape, and if he's blessed enough to make the practice squad, at least if he puts good enough stuff on tape, that some team will keep their eyes out for him, because I think that he can transition very well as a quarterback. Got the good size, good strength, and good stamina to do so. And his teammate in college, Jordan Jones, who is a slash fullback slash tight end, he's there as well. The Philadelphia Eagles kind of stayed close to local as they went to Morgan State and got Nassie Bailey, wide receiver. In his senior year with Morgan State as a Bear, he had 54 receptions for 996 yards and 10 touchdowns. He also has returned some punts as well. He also returned a punt for a score. And he played some linebacker before. Not saying that he's going to convert to a linebacker, but he played on the defense side of the ball. He has soft hands, very physical. Not surprised he used to be a linebacker. Protects the ball with his body very well. He's decent in traffic, quick off the snap, a possession receiver, but he's better in the red zone situation, jump ball situation. Decent hand technique, balance, and he is a blocker. So you don't get too many receivers that want to come out there and block. Now, the New York Giants has been really active within the NFL Regional Combine platform, and they signed another young man coming that came through that was going to be at the HBCU Combine from Hampton, Christian Angelo. Great feet, plays the ball well, keeps his eyes on the quarterback, shields his body very well, good feet, savvy, solid anticipation, rarely give up the inside, confident, does not gamble, the team guy, have good solid pad level, fundamentally sound, have good technique. So he's definitely someone who I think that will make his team for sure. The Tennessee Titans, they signed defensive tackle Kobe Smith from out of South Carolina State. He definitely have a good skill set to make this squad as well. So when we look at the breakdown from the players from the HBCU combine that would have gone there, you know, we have 7 out of the 9 players that would have been attending that, but was still able to get in the NFL. And like I said earlier in the show, it did not scratch the surface on the players that, unlike the players that came through that was going to attend the Regional Combine Invitational, where you had vast majority of those players signing to a team. But the HBCU Combine did not have a lot. Now, I'm not saying that every player from the Invitational regards of the Regional Combine made or signed with the team. I'm not saying that. Just a majority of them. But it was vice versa for the HBCU Combine. Now, with the COVID-19 situation, unfortunately, it affects millions of people in this country. Matter of fact, around the world, it affects a lot of people mentally, spiritually, emotionally, financially, and of course physically, as in the tens of thousands people had lost their lives due to the pandemic. But there are things that put in place, local government and across the board, to at least try to sustain health, you know, for the citizens, particularly in the United States. Some people have been benefiting for it, unfortunately some people have not, you know, but that's not the whole issue here that I'm talking about. But there was some things that was put in place to help try to sustain life in itself. But when it turns to football, and when it turns to that draft year, that eligibility year, if a player did not make it to the league or sign with a team during that draft eligible year, it's really hard the following year to have those guys, you know, get in front of NFL scouts to make it into the NFL. Now, with the Alliance of American Football, the Spring League, and the XFL, for the past 2 years, we had some spring ball, which was something that players could gravitate to put on tape how they play on the field, to after their eligible year, draft year has passed, they still had an opportunity to still get to the NFL because they were playing, they had some stuff to put on tape to get recognized for the NFL. Now, both leagues had no affiliation with the NFL, but it did help some players. With the AAF, 17 of those players were able to sign with NFL clubs. Not all of them still in the league now. At the XFL, 14 players are currently signed with NFL teams. Now, both of those leagues have folded. Both of those leagues are not coming back. But before those leagues had, you know, had existed, NFL football operations had something they call a pro player combine. Pretty much a blueprint of what they had in 2015 was the veteran combine. Fortunately, I was at all these workouts. And the essence for the reason from the pro player combine was to pull back guys that actually were in the league, but for some reason fell out the league for at least a year. With the veteran combine, they was able to pull some players that was out of the league for a couple of years. But the pro player pretty much kept, I would say, pretty much like a two-year window, you know, at least 1 year removed, but still was playing football. So those guys would have received an invitation to come and work out as a pro player. Now, because of the two spring leagues, the AAF and the XFL had existed, the operations kind of suspended the pro player. Now, with both of those platforms gone, operations could have an opportunity to bring it back. Now, no one from the front office has talked about this. This is just me rambling, me as a writer, me as a evaluator, and someone who wants to make sure that young untapped talent still get a chance to get to the league. Now, with those two leagues out of the way, it would only make sense that the pro player would come back. Even if they just do it for 1 year, that'll be great, because there were some players from the regional combine, small school guys, that didn't get an opportunity or didn't get no shine to at least have an opportunity to sign with the team because they didn't have a workout. ACCU players, here we go. Most of those guys, all of them didn't have a workout, and most of those guys didn't receive a phone call. It would be great if some kind of combine workout for these players that missed out due to the pandemic, that missed out in working out for NFL teams. It would be great to have those guys to at least basically have an opportunity to work out next year, assuming everything is going to be stable, that these guys will have a chance. Now, the other 32 teams not necessarily worrying about the small school guys because their scouting combine still went on, and most likely it'll still go on next year. No one really thinking about the small schools, and definitely no one is not thinking about the HBCU schools. This is a topic that I will talk about in the coming week, so make sure you guys stay tuned. Next week, most likely, my wife, she's going to return. Like I said, I want her on at least once a month so she can put her spin on sports. She talks a lot. She got a lot to say. So make sure you guys tune in next week when Latia Barnes come back on the show. You guys can always reach out to me on any one of my social handles on Twitter at @Locker_Report, on Facebook, LockerReport.com, and Locker Talk Podcast. And on Instagram, LockReport100, all small cat. Or also you shoot me an email at Barry Barnes via Barry Barnes at Locker-Report.com. Hope everyone stays safe. Everyone continue to watch all kind of sports, even repeat. And make sure you keep looking at The Last Dance. I can't wait. Definitely going to get into that and see what Mike and those guys, how they ended this series. Everyone stay blessed. Be safe out there. Talk to you next week.
Pro Talk with the mighty Oba. The mighty Oba. Pro Talk.
Welcome to Pro Talk with the Mighty Oba. We are here today with my good friend George Radney from the Challenger Community News and our special guest, Vance Johnson. Vance Johnson was one of the great three amigos from the Denver Broncos during the glory years of the 1990s. He was recruited by Mike Shanahan and was one of the great players of the legacy of those championship teams. Man, Vance Johnson is someone that I met at the Super Bowl in 2019 in Atlanta, and after that, I knew I had to contact him to have him on this broadcast. Vance, how you doing?
I am blessed, brother. Thank you, man. I've been looking forward to it. It was good to see you at the Super Bowl.
It was, and just hearing a brief description of your story, I knew that I had to be exposed to your book. The name of your book is Uncovered: Why Becoming Less Became Everything. What made you put this book together, Vance?
Interesting. Over the course of the last 6 years that I've been clean, free from the bondage of addiction and really knowing how to cope with my mental illness, I wanted to tell my story. And the only way you can really share your story with anybody is to be uncovered, meaning literally be naked. And so during my career, the whole thing was no one can cover me, right, in football. They can't cover me. Well, guess what? I figured I'd do the same thing when it came to talking about what's happened in my life so that hopefully someone else would be free and know that I can break some stigma by uncovering my life story, my journey.
Well, part of your journey, too, you talked about in the beginning of your book, was that you were exposed to domestic abuse. Can you just tell me a little bit about your early beginnings?
Absolutely. So I'm originally from Jersey, Trenton, New Jersey, actually. Good place to be from. And I mean that, actually. So my father grew up in the streets of Jersey, and he was raised by the streets because his father died at a very young age. And so my dad didn't have a father to look up to, and so he learned through his experiences how to live life. And a part of that life was to get involved with using drugs, selling, running numbers in the streets, and just feeding his flesh because he was one of six siblings and it was about having fun. Well, he got into trouble at one point because he actually was a part of a gang. Mm-hmm. And my dad, being in this gang, was literally at one point one of the last gang members alive. And so when he was facing a lot of jail time and possible prison, a lifetime of prison, the judge told him, listen, this was back in the 50s. You have a choice, young man. You're either going to end up dead, you're going to end up in prison, possibly for a lifetime, or I'm going to give you an option. And back in the 50s, they did this. They offered him a chance to join the service. And so my dad opted for the service, where he was stationed out in Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And while in Arizona and being in the service in the Army, he got a little bit of, underneath his belt, started getting disciplined, and they let him go out one night. And my father went out to, do you remember a singer by the name of James Brown?
Yes, sir.
Well, my father goes to a James Brown concert, and he sees a young lady sitting inside of a car, and he taps on the window, and she rolls the window down, and couldn't push a button back then. You had to roll it with your hand. So she rolls the window down and introduces herself, says, hi, my name is Gene, and he says, my name is Gene. So he talked to this young lady. He was 21 and talked to a 15-year-old girl. He ended up going out to where she lived at, where she picked cotton for a living, and after a few months, he proposed to her. And she ended up getting pregnant, and as a result, we obviously know that's my mom now. We moved back to New Jersey, but then there's a saying, you can take the brother out of Jersey, but you can't take Jersey out of the brother. So my father went back to his ways, and he started running numbers, and the other thing he started doing again was, being abusive to my mother, because he didn't know how to treat a woman. So mom was really sick of it. She was scared. She was a young girl. So she took me and snuck out back to Arizona. Well, my father wanted me in his life, so he brought us back to New Jersey, and he continued the domestic abuse of my mother, and my sister was born, and it got to a point where my mom said, I can't deal with this anymore. I'm leaving you. I'm taking my kids back to Arizona. If you want to come be with us out there, you can.
Mm.
That's where the saying is, you could take Jersey, take the brother out of Jersey, but you can't take Jersey out of the brother.
Mm.
So nothing changed in Tucson, Arizona. The domestic violence actually got even worse, and now my sister and I start witnessing it as children.
How did that affect you, Vance, witnessing the abuse?
Interesting enough, when this is how it affects you. When you get, as a young child, exposed to domestic stuff happening in the home, it really starts to affect you emotionally. And being from Jersey, we got a saying, you know, you don't tell people at school or in the public what's happening in your life at home behind the closed doors. Well, my sister and I spent a lot of time crying and witnessing my mom be beat on, her nose bloody, her eyes blackened, and my father coming home late at night, you know, smelling the alcohol, the marijuana. Back in the late 60s, it was PCP, I think, was the drug of choice for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also a functional alcoholic. And so it really affected my sister and I to the point where I hated this man. And I really planned on, when I grew up, man, staying close to mom so that if I had to, I was going to kill this man. I'm not going to say a bad word, I'll cuss anymore. I was going to kill this brother because I was sick of the way I saw him treating my mother. And I sure wasn't going to be like him because he was just an evil man. And not knowing that when you grow up as a child, the things that you are witness to, the things that you are surrounded in your environment to,
yes,
you don't know, but you're going to become that.
Yes.
Right? No matter how bad you don't want to, if you don't know anything else, how else can you create your own world? And as we go on with the story, I'll share how I tried to create my own world.
Mm. How did you try to do that, Vance?
Well, I'll tell you exactly how I tried to do it. So growing up as a kid, the last thing I wanted to do was have a relationship because I didn't know how to be a husband. The last thing I wanted to do was have sex because I saw what my father was doing with his penis. And so all I did was I thought girls were pretty, but I wanted to just keep to myself. Well, I started sneaking in my father's room, you know, like teenagers do. And actually, I was probably around 9 or 10. Then I start witnessing, not witnessing, but I start seeing these magazines.
Mm.
Remember a magazine called Hustler?
Yes, sir.
Well, I was sneaking in my father's closet, and I looked in these magazines called Hustler, and I opened the magazine up, and I saw these amazing, happy, smiling, naked white women.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that was happiness.
Okay.
So I'm seeing a father beat on a black mom, and I'm thinking, when I grow up, I'm going to marry one of them because that's happiness. I don't want to be around what I'm seeing this black woman get beat up. So, and I see my mom arguing back with him and my father arguing. We'd go to church, but we were living like hypocrites, unfortunately. I didn't know the word hypocrite back then. To me, it was normal. I got to a point when I was a teenager, man, where I was so angry with my father, I promised myself that I was going to cut my penis off.
Oh, wow.
And I meant it. You see some mental illness going on right now?
Yes, sir.
And my only escape, and this is the reality of it, my only escape was creating an identity for myself, and that was becoming an athlete and being famous and being great and being better than everybody else and living a life in my head so that I didn't have to live the one in reality that I was growing up around.
Wow.
But it also made my father proud. And so by making him proud, he beat on my mom less.
Mm.
So this was the making of pain becoming my, making me into a great athlete, not knowing that it was going to lead literally at one point to me almost dying.
Mm-hmm.
So at that young age, I just really wanted to, obviously, like I said, make him proud. I wanted to protect mom, and I wanted to be great. And so it was about running races, winning track meets. You know, I got to the point where I was going to the over across the country, even outside of the United States of America, where I won the gold medal as a young athlete in the Pan American Games. So sports was what drove me when I was a child.
Mm. When did it start, you know, diversifying for yourself with sports?
You know, the sports that I ran, that I did, which was running because I was a little guy and I was shy, was track and field, and, you know, I actually ended up going to college, and I beat Carl Lewis in the long jump as a freshman in college, and that really set me off into this spiraling thing, thinking I know I'm going to be great one day. In my football career, I had a chance to come from a fifth place running back to first string in less than a week because I ended up running a kickoff return back for 99 yards for a touchdown on a kickoff return. And so it was just about living that life of fame and hopefully one day fortune. And the other thing that happened to me was once I became a young college athlete, I ended up having a girlfriend and having sex. And since I didn't know how to be a man, she got pregnant the very first time I had sex.
Wow.
And this ended up happening twice in a row because her dad wouldn't let me spend any more time with her because I wouldn't quit football. So I got even by having sex with another woman, had another baby.
Mm.
So I've got two kids before I even go to college. I'm sorry, rather, but before I even get out of college.
Wow.
So I don't know how much time we have in this interview. I don't know if we're going to a break or nothing, but I can keep going or I can
No, you can keep going.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here I am now. You know, I'm this great athlete in college. I've got an amazing opportunity to possibly get drafted and go to – I'm sorry if you hear my phone buzzing because everyone's calling me all over the country.
I understand.
Yes. So here I have now this amazing opportunity to go to the – Junior Olympics. I go to the Junior Olympics and win the gold medal. Then I get an opportunity to be a part of the Olympics. I barely missed the Olympics by a quarter of an inch. I got beat the last jump of the night, so I was on the team as an alternate in long jump. Then I go to the scouting combine, and I end up running against Jerry Rice.
Wow.
In the 40 meters. And my good friend Randall Cunningham, former Eagles quarterback and now pastor of a church in Las Vegas, he actually was one of my really good friends at the time. He threw me passes and then told me to blow Jerry Rice away. I ran a 4.18, 4.19, and that was back when you could do stopwatches, not electronic timing. So, you know, at this point in my life, there was no domestic issues in my life. I was not the man that was going to put his hands on a woman. I was just the man that was achievement-oriented. I wanted to achieve my identity. So now, here I am. I get drafted in the second pick in the second round by the Denver Broncos. At this time in my life, brother, I hadn't smoked no weed, I haven't drank no alcohol, I haven't done any drugs, and there was nothing about that lifestyle that I wanted to be a part of, especially because I saw my father do it all. Mm. I get drafted by the Denver Broncos, second pick, second round. I fly out to Denver, Colorado, and I go through the first three preseason games, and I'm doing really good. It's going to be an amazing time, and I'm one of the stars. We get to the fourth and final preseason game before the final cut. We play against San Francisco. I'm back there standing on the 10-yard line at the end of the game, and all I have to do is do a fair catch for a punt. And I end up dropping the punt. The ball rolls in the end zone, and San Francisco scores a touchdown and wins the ball game.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's where things kind of got rocky for me. Because at that time, my teammates thought I was going to get cut. So on the way home, I knew I was going to get cut. On the way that very next morning to the locker room for the final cuts, they stopped by the liquor store, and I had my first shot of tequila.
Uh-oh. That was your first drink?
That was my first drink, man. I was almost 23. I think I was 23 years old, my first drink in my life.
Mm.
It was the best thing that ever happened to me because it took away all the anxiety, and I didn't get cut. So now I'm able to get through my first part of my career with having a little drink once in a while because it took the nerve off. I actually was brave. I started talking to more girls. I started having a few injuries on the football field, and so I got introduced to prescription pills for pain.
Yeah.
Now, alcohol and the pain medication, I'm a rock star now, man. I'm playing reckless. I'm meeting women. I'm just having a great time. So this is kind of how the beginning of my road to addiction started, was by coping by using.
Did, as far as your stardom that you were starting to obtain, did the addiction feed into that, or did it become more dependent on the addiction?
You know, interesting enough, I didn't realize at this point in my life, but I was being addicted to pretty much anything that made me feel good. So the fame made me feel good. The fortune made me feel good. The accolades and the people, you know, knowing my name and wanting my autograph gave me identity. And by using alcohol and prescription pills and then playing reckless on the football field because I was one of the smallest guys, it actually made me brave. And so what I saw myself doing was things that I wouldn't normally do if I was in my right mind, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So I didn't know I was actually building a tolerance up to the point where this was going to become a problem. And during that early part of my career, and smoking marijuana for the first time at age 24, drinking alcohol consistently, taking pain medications, getting shots for morphine because of the injuries. Life was good, man. I ended up actually meeting another young lady, and she got pregnant. So here I am now with the third woman pregnant. I didn't want to do the same thing I had done when I was a little younger, so I promised to marry her. And I actually ended up, because she was going to have an abortion, flew out to Houston, Texas to pick her up and then fly out to Las Vegas to get married. Ended up losing about $50,000 out there in Vegas that night, but I got married for $12 the next morning.
It kind of bounced it off a little bit.
Bounced it off, so I wanted to do things right this time.
Mm. Were you gambling when you lost the $60,000?
I don't think there's any other way to lose it out there in Vegas except gambling. So that was another addiction. You see this starting to build up now, man?
Yeah.
Everything I'm doing is at an excess. So I end up flying back out to Denver, Colorado with my new wife. We get married, obviously, in Vegas. We have a son, and I'm just happy. So I'm going to do things different. I'm not going to be like my father. I'm not going to be like this man who was abusive, who didn't know how to treat his wife. I'm going to do things different. Yeah, I had two other children by two other women, but, you know, bye, Felicia. I'm going to live my life. This is my world now. Well, a few months later after we had a child, man, I'm in the shower one day with all these guys. These brothers are huge, too, not just tall. So somebody got that out there listening to the show. Anyway, one of my teammates said, "How's our girl Ange doing?" And I was like, "Who are you talking about, Ange?" Another guy says, "Angela, big freak." Dude, these guys were having sex with my wife.
What?
Yes. My teammates were screwing my wife.
Mm.
I was so pissed off.
Oh, my God.
I was so pissed off. When I left out of that shower, man, and by the way, I just saw these brothers this past weekend. So at the Denver Bronco game where I got inducted into the top 100 all-time Denver Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about forgiveness at the end of the show. So,
okay.
So I'm so pissed off, man. I run home. I'm taking Xanax at the time, and I'm drinking. I'm pissed off, man. I go upstairs, and I'm screaming and yelling at my wife, and I'm confronting her about cheating on me with my teammates. And I pushed her across the bed, man, and she flies across this bed, and she hits her head on the closet door, and she's laying on the ground, and she's not breathing. Literally, I mean, I'm sitting there, and my wife looks, she's dead. And so I pick her up, man. I'm trying to revive her, and I run into the bathroom carrying her, and I'm like, "Oh, my God, I'm going to go to prison." And I'm trying to get her to breathe, and I'm dumping water out of the toilet into her face, man, and then she breathes.
Mm.
And I was so angry now that she's even alive.
Mm.
And so what am I going to do? The very same thing that I saw my father do. My mother didn't deserve to be abused, but this woman cheated on me, and so she deserves everything she gets. Now, I've been telling you all ever since I was a kid how mental health is a big deal.
Yes.
And if I don't know how to cope or to deal or to get through relationships or navigate, I didn't know nothing about counselors. I thought counselors were for people that were crazy. I'm Vance Johnson. I'm famous. So my fix was to get a divorce because I hate her and then cheat because my teammates are cheating. So now here I am, man. I get another divorce and I get married again. I make another woman pregnant. I'm cheating on all of them while using Xanax, drinking, smoking weed in the off season, spending all my money. I mean, it was just out of control, man. I mean, you literally would have to show a movie for people to be able to experience everything in the depth so they can see how even what they see right now happening around the league with these guys that are struggling with this domestic stuff.
Yes.
Brother, they got problems, man. They got mental health problems, man. It comes from back when they were children, but nobody sees it. They only see the edited version of what the news wants you to see. These guys are hurting.
So the root of your issues was at the beginning seeing the abuse that your mother received from your father.
Exactly.
And then the sad thing you talked about before, you found yourself becoming your father. Am I right?
Worse. I mean, literally worse. I mean, I didn't think that then. I thought then I was better than my father because, see, my mother didn't deserve that. She was a young 15-year-old who got married at a young age and was a virgin. This person right here deserved to be abused because she cheated on me with my teammates. You see how crazy that is, man? Well, forgiveness in that. There's no forgiveness in that. And so the only way I was coping was by stimulating and doing it over and over again. Man, I went to my first Super Bowl in 1986, and we ended up playing against the Giants, and we lost, so you Giants fans out there, you're welcome. But I go back home. I'm in my closet at home, and I'm like, you know, that was where I wanted to be my whole life, was famous and go to the Super Bowl.
Hmm.
I come back home from the Super Bowl, and I'm empty. So I'm sitting inside of my closet, and I'm drunk. I'm using drugs, man, and I'm cutting my wrist. I wanted to die. And all of a sudden, the phone rings, and it's my mother saying, "The spirit put you on my mind. I needed to call and check on you, son."
Hmm.
I said, "Mom, I'm so glad you called because I was going to kill myself."
Mm. Did any of your teammates at the time know what was going on with you?
Brother, my teammates didn't have a clue. And as we go on with the story, you'll see, I just saw these guys this past weekend, and you should have saw what they were looking like when I was showing them a picture of me and what happened to me.
Mm.
As time goes on through my career, man, I mean, these guys didn't have any idea what I was doing off the field, except they knew I was a whore, but they was whores too. And so, well, we won't get into that because I ain't going to start name calling.
Right.
So I end up actually throughout this 10-year career, man, 3 Super Bowls, which I just kept trying to feed my flesh and make myself better, 4 marriages, having 3 women pregnant at the same time. And I had my wife pregnant. I had another woman that I was seeing pregnant, and I had somebody else's wife pregnant at the same time during my career.
Oh, wow.
You think I would have went viral?
Yes.
I mean, I don't even think that's impossible in the history of the NFL that one professional football player had 3 women pregnant at the same time during his career, but I did.
Wow.
Advance, do you think George Randy from Challenger Community News,
hey,
the question for you, do you feel that the physicality of the game, did that hurt a lot of guys when they come off the field and you play such a physical sport and then go home and deal with everyday issues? Do you think that kind of helps in the sense of bring on the violence or bring on the domestic violence and things of that nature?
I think there's 2 answers to that. The first one is no, because there's nothing about being in that atmosphere that's going to make you angry because you didn't do well, so then you're going to go home and beat on your wife. But the other answer is yes, because the concussions and the underlying things, the pressures and the stresses that happened on the field was trying to figure out how you're going to make the team, and then going home and then somebody having a disagreement with you or your spouse or girlfriend, you know, doing something that, because you feel like you're a pretty person and you should be, you know, the god of your world, anything they do is going to set you off. So it's kind of a two-edged sword right there. But there were guys, you know, like for instance, Simon Fletcher, like Steve Atwater, like Steve Foley,
mm-hmm.
and Steve Watson. Those guys, man, they were cool, calm, collected. They were in their locker room. They played great football, and they loved their brides. And they're still married to this day.
Mm.
They weren't going home abusing their wives.
Wow. Steve Atwater was real violent. Boy, he used to bring it, too, man.
Bro, thank you so much. Remember the hit heard around the world when he hit Chris Nicoye?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They call that the hit heard around the world. But Steve Atwater was the kindest, nicest, most sweetest guy in the world inside the locker room. Mm-hmm. And he was the same person with his relationships.
Wow. Vance, so, when did you know you had to start, or when did you know you were basically approaching rock bottom? Or when did it just start falling apart?
This is when it fell apart. At the end of 10 years, I had a chance to go back and sign another 3-year contract and back up Rod Smith. I was so into myself and I was so into my feelings and using that I didn't even retire. I just walked away from the game. And so when I walked away from the game, the lights went out. And now I have no idea. And that rock bottom, to me, wasn't rock bottom. That was getting away from what wasn't making me feel good anymore. And so my only coping at that point in my life was to use more, to drink more, take more pills, have more sex, meet more women, get married over and over again. Hmm. I mean, again, I don't know how much time we have, but long story short, dude, I was married 7 times.
Hmm.
7 times during that period of time in my life. And ironically, having children with all these women and abandoning my children each time, I had 3 children that literally were being sexually abused that I didn't even find out until the last few years, that one of my sons was getting raped by his grandfather on his mother's side. Another son was getting raped by a babysitter, and a daughter of mine was being raped by her mother's boyfriend right in the same bed next to her mom.
Mm.
So during this time in my life where I'm living in my addiction, you know, I just felt like, you know, life is over, man, and so I'm just going to use and go figure out how to be famous again. I started ripping people off. I had a restaurant. My oldest son came over to the Western Slope of Colorado to see me. And so, to me, my life was starting all over again. But I didn't realize that the only thing I was coping with was dealing with life was by using drugs and alcohol. My oldest son actually ends up coming over, and he tries to get a hold of me one morning, and he can't reach me because I'm doing somebody or doing something. And he ends up actually, because he had broken the engine in his car, took his motorcycle across the mountain to see his mother, to spend some time with her because her dad had just died of cancer. My son got killed that night. And it was my fault that my son died.
That was your oldest son?
Yeah. It was my fault that my son died. And the only way I was going to be able to deal with my son, I'm sorry, man, I get really emotional.
No, that's okay.
I talk about this story every day. But I keep going back to that day because I don't ever want to forget what it felt like. And I woke up the next morning and I got a call from my ex-wife, my first wife, and she said our son was dead. And the only way I coped in my life, even right then, was to use more. And so for the next 2 years, man, all I did was drinking and smoking and pills for 2 years straight. And I called my mom one night and I said, Mom, I'm gonna die tonight, Mom. And so she says, no, son, no. And she races over to my house and she picks me up and we're racing to the hospital. And I get out of the car, walking into the hospital, and I literally fell into a coma. And so they rushed me to a larger hospital where they can induce a coma. And so I laid there in the bed for 28 days in a coma. And my kids, they called because my mother was afraid to pull the plug because my body was shutting down and my organs were shutting down. And so they called my kids and they all got a conference call and they said, screw him, we hate him, let him freaking die. And so they unplugged me. And I wish I had sent you the deathbed picture of me, but there's a photo of me that my sister took while they propped me up to watch me stop breathing. Yeah. When I woke up from that coma, man, I was chained to the bed, and I started talking to the people that were visiting me, and I said, you've been visiting me this whole time. And they were like, yeah, Vince, but you were in a coma. I said, I saw you guys. I saw the different pastors that came to pray over me. Dude, I was traveling around the hospital in my spirit, because I knew what was upstairs, and the nurse would be like, that's upstairs, Mr. Johnson, but you haven't been out of that bed. Then all of a sudden, these dark shadows would be walking into my bedroom looking at me every day. And I was like, those aren't angels. Every day I saw these dark shadows. I mean, they were demons, man. And this is after I was awake. And I start realizing that, you know what, this world that we live in, this flesh world, is just a dressing room for eternity, man. This is not the real thing. Right. This flesh dies. But that didn't stop me from using drugs and alcohol.
Join us for part two of the Vance Johnson interview on Pro Talk.
Pro Talk. Pro Talk, Pro Talk with the Mighty Oba. The Mighty Oba.
She likes.